Okay, tonight we continue our series on the existence of God. We're using Stephen Charnock's The Existence and Attributes of God as the primary source as we study the Bible and ponder arguments for the existence of God. And Charnock's main four arguments are from production, harmony, ends, and preservation of all created things. So in other words, we've looked at number one, the production of all created things, that how they have come about, how they're produced, and they all evidence a creator. And that's primarily pondering the cosmological argument, the law of cause and effect, which is derived from the logical law of non-contradiction. Self-creation is an impossibility. Something would both have to be and not be at the same time. It would have to exist before it existed to create itself. And that is clearly a contradiction and an impossibility. And whatever is changing is not eternal. Immutability, unchanging, is an aspect of what is eternal. So God is a spirit, infinite, eternal, and unchanging. Eternal and unchanging in his being, wisdom, power, holiness, justice, goodness, and truth. So you know when you look at anything that changes, it's not eternal. It had a beginning. And anything that had a beginning is an effect. And everything that's an effect has a cause. And the law of cause and effect is that every effect has a cause. It is not that everything has a cause, but only that every effect has a cause. God is eternal, never had a beginning. No beginning, no end. He is eternal. And therefore, he is not an effect. He is the uncaused first cause of all things. And then we pondered a bit as to the characteristics of that which would be the first cause of all things. It must be all wise, all powerful, all knowing, all good. We've moved into then harmony, the second one. So the harmony of all created things evidence the existence of God. And it's closely tied to the next one we'll get into after harmony is ends. Ends are purposes of all created things. So to say things are in have a certain harmony is to say they have a certain order, that some things serve other things, that they're a system. They're designed to work all together as a system. There's harmony and order, which means it's designed, that there's an ultimate designer, which is along the classical teleological argument for the existence of God. And the next one is ends that we're going to get to. So production, harmony, ends, and ends is the same thing. The ultimate ends are purposes. All created things. And that's there's a designer who has designed things for particular purposes. And then the last one will be preservation, the preservation of all things, which is closely tied to the production of all things with the cosmological argument. That he who caused all things to exist holds all things together by the word of his power. So we're in harmony. And I was pondering, it's important for you to understand kind of my passion with this study. I want to read to you a paragraph from Francis Schaeffer's book, the God who is there. In other words, the God who exists, the existence of God. And when he was assembling his collected writings at the end of his life, this is the book he put first. And in it he wrote this. In face of this modern nihilism, nihilism is this, that all is meaningless. In face of this modern nihilism, smashing or the apathy, so there's different varieties. One would say, let's just destroy all things, smash it all, because everything's meaningless. Or the other is apathy, who really cares? It's all meaningless. In face of this modern nihilism, smashing or the apathy, Christians are often lacking in courage. We tend to give the impression that we will hold on to the outward forms, whatever happens, even if God really is not there. But the opposite ought to be true of us, so that people can see that we demand the truth of what is there, and that we are not dealing merely with platitudes. Just general wishful thinking. In other words, it should be understood that we take this question of truth and personality so seriously that if God were not there, we would be among the first to have the courage to step out of the queue, to leave Christianity. I'll read that again. It should be understood that we take this question of truth and personality so seriously that if God were not there, we would be among the first to have the courage to step out of the queue of asserting He's there. Insofar as we show this to be our attitude, maybe the far out ones will begin to take us seriously and listen to what we have to say. If they do not see that in our integrity we would join them in their destruction, dropping out, or apathy, then they will not and should not listen to us. If they do not see that we have a quest for truth, to understand truth, and our desire and passion to know and believe what is true, that we will examine everything, and if it is found that God does not exist, we will leave it, and we will seek to destroy everything and be just as apathetic as anybody else in the world. And if they understand that our quest for truth is that passionate, then maybe they'll start to listen to us. Otherwise, they just look at Christians as just people who put up wishful thoughts. There is such a thing as truth and falsehood. Good and evil. What is real and what is not. And our passion as Christians is to know truth. And as we've started, Charnock started with a broad general introduction from Psalm 19 and Romans 1:20. That since the creation of the world, God's invisible attributes, His eternal power and Godhead are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, so that they are without excuse. For even though they knew God, they did not honor Him as God or give thanks. Romans 1, 20 and 21. Through the things that have been made, that God reveals Himself to us through a medium, through His works of creation. And we understand things about Him through the medium of creation. Through science, through scientific study of the things that are made. And this is a part of saying the harmony of all things that have been made, that we can see with our own eyes and feel with our hands and smell with our nose, even taste with our mouth, hear with our ear. All of these things through the five physical senses They evidence a harmony. That you don't get if you just randomly throw it up all in the air and see what happens. No, it has to come to be and exist from an intelligent, all-powerful, all-knowing, all-wise, all-good being. So don't accept Christianity just because your parents believe in Christianity. Don't accept Christianity just because your friends believe it. You've got to come to the conviction in your own mind, this is true. Pastor Ron? Amen. Yes. As Francis Schaeffer said, there's one reason to be a Christian, because it is true. And what you find when you study Buddhism or Hinduism, the false religions of the East, they fail because they have no basis for personality. They have no basis for absolutes in the antithesis between right and wrong, truth and falsehood. The false gods of the West, they fail. Why? Because to them, if there is a divine being, he's not infinite. So they have little gods just like themselves. But in Christianity, the true and living God has revealed himself to be both infinite and personal. So therefore, he is the one who is able and is the creator of all things. He's infinite, all-powerful, all-knowing, all-wise, and yet personal. Which is why there's a basis for you and I to say that we're persons created in his image. And there's a basis for love and morality grounded in his unchanging character, who shows us at the cross that he punishes sin and yet loves us to bear that punishment to save us from hell. So in harmony, we've looked at his first argument in the linking of contrary qualities together, which is counterintuitive for God to link contrary qualities together, hotness and cold or dryness and wet, for instance. And we've mentioned just sweating as an example. We're in a hot day. You'd overheat instantly if you stayed dry, but you immediately start sweating and get wet. Why is that? That's to cool you off, because God has created this thing called water that's in three states, a solid, liquid, and a gas. And when water goes from a liquid to a gas, it takes energy. So when your skin gets all wet on that hot day, and you're sweating, then it evaporates on that hot day, that water on your skin goes from a liquid to a gas, and it takes energy, so it cools you. You have opposites working together, so you don't have a heat stroke. We find that in the seasons, for instance, as well, with plants. Certain plants need a certain cold season and length of dark days in order to germinate in the springtime. Without that, they won't. There's this linking of contrary qualities together in God's world that he created. And number two is what we're in now, is in the subserviency of one to another. And I mentioned to you when we started that, as I looked up the term subserviency, it was a new term in the 17th century. Charnock died in 1680, so he's using a new term that came to be in the English language, but it's this idea of a subordinate place or function. That God has said that in all created things, that they're in different ways, they have subordinate functions where they serve other created things. They're subordinate and serve other created things. We looked at the subserviency of heavenly bodies, and for instance, how the sun that shines, like it was a very sunny day today, how we need that. How it serves the lower world, the earth, in a sense. So that heavenly body, the sun, he's speaking in physical terms here, so in the things that have been made, so we're speaking of the sun and the stars, right? And the moon, etc. Well, that in a way serves earth. Our eyes have been made in such a way that they need the sun, and the sun has been made for the eyes. We're made for each other. And we have certain photoreceptors in our eyes to see certain wavelengths from the sun to see things. Plants, during photosynthesis, the sun serves them so that we get energy. It takes kinetic energy in motion from the sun and light energy, and through photosynthesis fixes that energy into chemical bonds. And those chemical bonds in the plant material we call calories, units of chemical energy. So then you eat lettuce, it has so much calories. Well, it's chemical energy that's been fixed there through photosynthesis from the sun. So the sun is actually, in God's interconnecting of things, the subserviency of the sun to our the base of our food system on earth, and also with providing oxygen as a byproduct, as it fixes carbon dioxide and releases oxygen and photosynthesis as a byproduct. We need oxygen to breathe in our atmosphere. But then the carbon is taken out of carbon dioxide from the air, and that carbon is fixed in carbon-carbon-carbon-hydrogen bonds, and you have organic matter in the plant material. Organic chemistry, those who have had that, Pastor Ron, it's nothing but carbon-carbon-carbon-hydrogen bonds till you're blue in the face. This is the way God created the universe here. But that's the idea, where the sun is subservient to all of this taking place here on earth. Which is counterintuitive. You think, well, that's a heavenly body. But it's serving what is here in many different ways. Well, now we're getting into here the subserviency of the lower world and looking at it from different perspectives. I turn to Isaiah 45:18. Isaiah 45:18. For thus says the Lord, who created the heavens, who is God, who formed the earth and made it, who has established it, who did not create it in vain, who formed it to be inhabited. It's the last two phrases, especially in emphasis here. Who did not create it in vain. Not wasted. He formed it to be inhabited. So the earth and the sea were created to be inhabited. The sea affords water to the rivers, which are spread out over the earth to refresh the earth and bring forth food. So think, the earth, the sea, the sea affords rivers. All of this is serving the creatures inhabiting the earth. They're subservient to you and I and the animals. Okay? So the sea affords water to the rivers, which are spread out over the earth to refresh the earth and bring forth food. So from the sea, water evaporates. The earth is over, what? Roughly 78% water on the surface of the earth. It's called the blue planet. Because of that, it all looks blue from a distance with all the water. So all the water evaporates from the sea, forms clouds when it cools, spread out in the weather system and moves around the earth and then drops in rain, right? And then rivers form and it flows eventually back to the ocean, but it's watering the earth. Look at Psalm 104. Psalm 104, 10, 11, and 14. Psalm 104, 10, 11, and 14. He, God, sends the springs into the valleys. They flow among the hills. They give drink to every beast of the field. The wild donkeys quench their thirst. Verse 14, He, God, causes the grass to grow for the cattle, vegetation for the service of man, that he may bring forth food from the earth. So this earth was created a certain way with a sea so that there'd be a certain climate and weather system to be inhabited by creatures, and in such a way that it would be watered and nourished to provide food and habitat for God's creatures that He placed here on earth. The trees provide habitation for birds. Look down at Psalm 104, 16 and 17. The trees of the Lord are full of sap, the cedars of Lebanon which He planted, where the birds make their nests. The stork has her home in the fir trees. All of this, again, from the biblical perspective, this is not blind, random chance. Remember, chance is just mathematical probability. That's all it is. Chance can do nothing. Remember R.C. Sproul's book, Not a Chance. But you will hear that all the time by unbelievers. They'll say, this came about by chance. I like to use that language, but chance does nothing. All it does is describe mathematical probabilities. And as we saw with production, the mathematical probability that all this came to be by chance is zero. That all of it came to be by chance, that all of it was produced here by chance, is zero. It had to be produced by an all-wise, all-powerful, all-knowing, personal being who designed it all. And this is a part of all of this, is to say there's harmony in it all. All of this is linked. All of it is meant to be inhabited, and every part has its purpose and end. The ground, we know, is filled with metals and minerals, and the roots of vegetation provide nutrients for the soil. There's many legumes that provide nitrogen. Legume plants, and what they do is they provide nitrogen to the soil. When you start studying plants and their roots and what they provide for the soil, as many of them provide different things for the soil. A lot of it is organic matter. They have lots of fine little roots that various organisms eat and dispose of, and bacteria and fungus, and you get nutrients. Which is why we're living in what's called the old tall grass prairie, especially south of us. Renville County, some of the richest farmland in the world, much less Minnesota. Why? Because it had the old tall grass prairie, very tall grass, so the roots were thick and deep, which is why when the farmers turn the soil over, it's black, rich as can be. Why? Because of the vegetation that was there. And this is the harmony of things, right? The harmony of things. Charnock says this, quote, things which are not fit for man's food are medicines for his cure when he's under some painful sickness. Have any of you taken aspirin? It's from the bark of a tree. All sorts of medicines are from various things God created. Scientists are still studying them right now, and they're trying to use artificial intelligence to go back and look at data we have to come up with new cures for new sicknesses and diseases we have from things in our environment, things we believe God created. But again, you see how ends are tied with harmony. What's the end of some things? Our The purpose is for our food, the ends. Some things, though, if they're not for food, the purpose is for a cure of some sickness, like aspirin for a headache. So that's where some will say that the greatest argument for the existence of God is from design. And that's where both harmony and ends are speaking of a designer, intelligence. Charnock says this, quote, "Can this be the result of chance?" Oh, there's that word again, right? He's writing, remember, the Enlightenment, the philosophical Enlightenment, the scientific philosophical Enlightenment started around 1600, went to probably around 1800. So he writes, "Can this be the result of chance, or not rather an infinite wisdom?" Makes much more sense to say infinite wisdom than random chance. When you start piling up one upon another and upon another. Do you know, I used to teach environmental conservation as an elective to undergrad students for many years. In the environmental conservation textbook, it was not written from a biblical perspective, but it noted in there that there are over 30,000 different plants on Earth that are edible for food for humans. Over 30,000. Not saying they all taste good, but they're edible for nutrition. God has given us much to eat, and we tend to focus on only certain things, right? And that's kind of was brought out as well in the textbook. We mainly have certain grains that we eat in the modern diet in the Western world. And as many of the Korean know, rice is one of the main staples in the world. Wheat is another one. Corn, right? There's only certain ones that are stand out. But technically, there's over 30,000 different kinds. And modern agriculture only focuses on a few and mass produces it like crazy. So the view is it's much more reasonable to say all of this harmony is the result of infinite wisdom. Someone designed it. Everything to fit together like it is. For the subserviency of the heavenly bodies to how the sun relates to the earth in so many different ways. And now the subserviency of the lower world and how things fit and serve one another in the lower world. Look at Psalm 104, 6 and 9. I'll read verse 5 with it. "You who laid the foundations of the earth so that it should not be moved forever. You covered it with the deep as with a garment. The waters stood above the mountains." And then verse 9, "You have set a boundary that they may not pass over, that they may not return to cover the earth." Yeah, and that's right. In God's judgment, He can remove these blessings of creation that He has united together. There could be famines. There can be disease and pestilence. The violent weather of tornadoes and hurricanes and floods. And in the midst of all things, it's amazing. It's a sin-cursed world. And yet as we begin with Psalm 19 and Romans 1:20, it still shows forth the glory of God in a sin-cursed existence. So that's where R.C. Sproul has said that the analogy is that this world is like a shattered mirror. You've seen a shattered mirror, right? Where it's got all of the lines in it and everything. It's been punctured, you know, just shattered. But you look at it, you can still see some of your reflection if you'd stared at it, right? And that's the idea, Sproul would say, is the idea is we still see some reflection of God who created all things by studying the things that have been made, even though it's in a shattered condition by sin. Thorns and thistles have arisen, right? That were not there before, you know, on the curse of sin in Genesis 3. Right? It's in a condition different than what it was at the beginning when all was very good. It's been shattered by sin. Every rose now has a thorn. The curse of sin is all over. And yet it still displays the glory of God the Creator, so that men are without excuse if they do not honor Him and give thanks, simply based on what He has revealed of Himself in His works of creation. So the idea is, who has covered the earth with the water of the seas and set a boundary that they may not pass over? Right? Psalm 104, 6 and 9. It is God who has done this, God the Creator. You know, was it blind chance or an infinite power that set boundaries on the sea? They keep telling us with global warming that we're going to be swallowed up by the sea. Florida will be no more. You know, I just saw, in the last couple of months, I saw a picture of Plymouth Rock, where the Pilgrims landed in 1620. It's still there, with the water still there, right next to the rock. Same place. Huh? God has set a boundary to the seas. So look at Job, Job 38, 8, 9, and 11. And I'll just say one word on that is, you know, my background's in science. So I've done a lot of reading, just for fun even, in global warming issues and environmental conservation issues. And the earth has a mechanisms. The whole earth has mechanisms when you have warming in certain areas, such as the Atlantic. What happens with warming is you get more evaporation. What happens when you get more evaporation? You get more clouds in the air. What happens there? All of the clouds flow over Antarctica, and they have more snow in Antarctica. The whole ice sheet of Antarctica enlarges. So it gets stored there. So the Atlantic may warm up more, and you have different El Nino and La Nina and different warming and cooling in the South Pacific, and that changes our weather patterns here, and we have all these things takes place, but guess what? There's these mechanisms to say, you know what? You may get more snow over Antarctica, and it's locked into the ice sheet in the South Pole, which keeps the sea levels from rising. All these things that counteract one another. This is the idea, thing, again, of harmony. Harmony. So Job 38, 8, 9, and 11. Or who shut in the sea with doors when it burst forth and issued from the womb? When I made the clouds its garment and thick darkness its swaddling band? Verse 11. When I said, this far you may come, but no farther, and here your proud waves must stop. Now we know that there was a worldwide flood. God released the waters above from the waters below. Genesis 7 through 9. Genesis chapter 7 through 9. And there was a worldwide flood. And God has set the rainbow. It's a covenant. It's a Noahic covenant with all flesh on the earth. Genesis 9. All creatures with the breath of life, that no more ever is there going to be a flood where the waters cover all the mountains. He set a boundary. And it's only under His decree that it originally took place. It's never going to happen again. Period. God said it. It's His oath, His covenant. And that's what the rainbow signifies. Boundaries have been set. We don't worry when it starts raining. There'll be localized floods, but never a worldwide flood again. Ever. Charnock says this, quote, there is a straight connection. The earth could not bring forth fruit without the heavens. The heavens could not water the earth without the vapors from it, unquote. You see subserviency, one to the other, harmony. I'll read it again. Quote, there is a straight connection. The earth could not bring forth fruit without the heavens. Meaning the weather systems we have in our atmosphere. That's what he's referring to here. Remember, the Jews had three levels of heavens, right? First heavens is the atmosphere. That's what he's speaking about here. The second is where we're talking about the stars and the moon, etc. And then the third heaven is where God dwells, the highest heavens. That's where he says here, there is a straight connection. The earth could not bring forth fruit without the weather system in the atmosphere. And the weather system, the atmosphere here would not have water unless there was vapors from the earth, evaporation from the earth. Each dependent upon the other. It's a system. It's a weather system. Whenever you see a system, it's an evidence of a designer, an intelligence. I mentioned that in the early 1990s, when I was at the University of Minnesota studying forestry and got a Bachelor of Science degree in forestry, is when the U.S. Forest Service, the Fish and Wildlife Agency, all of the agencies dealing with the environment went to an ecosystem-based approach, because that's what all the science was saying. It's all ecosystems. They're all systems. There's harmony everywhere. And they were acknowledging that. It was evidence that God's designed all of this. But it's on a grand scale with the heavenly bodies of the stars and the moon, as well as the interaction between the earth and the sun, as well as all of the systems here on earth, right? What's interesting is all of this subserviency of creatures centers in man. All of this subserviency centers in man. We are all nourished and refreshed and served by these things. Psalm 104, 6 and 9. And that's why he set the boundaries for it all and separated the land from the water and their interactions between them, their boundaries, and that the earth would provide vapors for the atmosphere and the atmosphere would provide rain for the earth, nourish the earth. But they're all centered in man as physical ecosystems. Psalm 8 is an interesting psalm. This is what Charnock goes to here, is when the psalmist admiringly considers the heavens, the moon, and the stars, he suggests that man is the end for which they were created. Turn to Psalm 8. Psalm 8, 3 and 4. When I consider your heavens, the work of your fingers, the moon and the stars which you have ordained, what is man that you are mindful of him, and the son of man that you visit him? That's this idea in verse 5 as well. You have made him a little lower than the angels, but you have crowned him with glory and honor. This idea, he has dominion. His dominion over creation. Delegated dominion from God. And he describes in particular the dominion that man has over creation. Look at verses 6 through 8. You have made him, that's you and me, human beings, created in God's image, you have made him to have dominion over the works of your hands. You have put all things under his feet, all sheep and oxen, even the beasts of the field, the birds of the air, the fish of the sea that pass through the paths of the sea. This is this idea that all of these things are subservient for us. They're centered in us to serve our needs. And he concludes how excellent God's name is in all the earth. In verse 9, O Lord, our Lord, how excellent is your name in all the earth. So what does he do? Then he's observed creation, and what he sees the subserviency of it all ultimately to us who have dominion over creation. And he praises God, he honors God and gives thanks to what he observes, right? This is that idea of Romans 1, 20 and 21. That since the creation of the world, God's invisible attributes are clearly seen, being understood through what has been made, so that men are without excuse. We ought to honor God and give thanks to see the wisdom and design. Here again, the end. This is where harmony and ends are interconnected. The purpose of things. Charnock says this is a quote, all things in the world, one way or the other, center in a usefulness for man. Some to feed him, some to clothe him, some to delight him, others to instruct him, some to exercise his wit, and others his strength. Unquote. I'll read that again. Charnock says, quote, all things in the world, one way or the other, center in a usefulness for man. Some to feed him, some to clothe him, some to delight him, others to instruct him, some to exercise his wit, and others his strength. Unquote. We're living in a day in which some neo-pagan scientists believe that we are the great parasite and disease on earth, the great cancer. Some of them even argue that everything would be better if we were extinguished as human beings from planet Earth. It's quite dishonoring to God to say those things. Yeah, amen. James 1:17, along with 1 Corinthians 4:7. Every good and perfect gift is from Him, right? He's unchanging, right? The Father of lights, the Father of the stars, the one who created all things, right? Never changes. And this is where it was Christians who started the modern scientific movement, because modern science was based on this. We want to think God's thoughts after Him. I wonder what the usefulness of this is. You know, the bark on that tree there. Let's study that. You know, let's study something. You come up with rubber, or you come up with inventions, right? You know, at the end of the 1800s, it was three technologies all came up together. A new technology for drilling oil deposits from under the earth. New technology for refining it into gasoline and diesel and other derivatives. And then as well, at the same time, the internal combustion engine that could use the derivatives of gas and diesel all together to come up with, so we'd have the automobile, right? But you say, things are useful. You think of all of the different materials that go into a piano or into a chair or the clothing we're wearing. All of the different materials into the glasses that I'm wearing, right? All of these things, we're thinking about the usefulness for you and I as human beings from things God has made. Some to instruct Him. You know, I've said it before, just to reiterate, you know, I have this bottled water up here, purified through reverse osmosis, which most bottled water is. You say, well, what is that? That's with pressure pushing water through a whole bunch of filters to purify it. Well, all they've done is they've been instructed by how God purifies water as it percolates through the soil. The soil acts like a filter. So when it rains, water hits the ground, And there's an infiltration rate based on the type of soil you have. If it exceeds the infiltration rate, the amount of rain, then you have runoff, surface runoff. But if it's within the infiltration rate, it infiltrates into the soil and then starts with gravity percolating through the soil. And the soil, you know, is tight little, it's like little a filter. And then it helps purify the water, so then it goes down into, ultimately hits bedrock and builds up as groundwater, and you can take a well and drill down there, which is what we have out here that waters the church garden, right? And this is where, if the deep enough, it will be pure, if that well is deep enough. But this is, it's the idea of reverse osmosis. I mean, we mimic nature of what God has done there to purify water for drinking. How about another way that water is purified is through evaporation, distillation, it's called. Distillation. So this is where the most pure water that's used in surgeries. So what they do is they, in a factory, they boil water, makes it go to liquid to a gas, and then you take it down a tube, the water vapor, down a tube, and they take it to another area and cool it. And then that's pure water. It left behind, when it evaporated, it left behind all of the gunk in the water. Any impure things. And then it was pure water vapor, is pure water, goes over, you cool it, and you have absolute pure water you can use even in surgeries. Well, where did we get that? Well, look at the parking lot out here. After it rains, water is sitting in some of the dirtiest oil puddles. You can see in some parking lots, you know, go to Walmart's parking lot, right? You got oil puddles, right? Well, you look down, it looks slimy and dirty, but then what? Water evaporates from it. It's left behind all of the oil and gunk and everything else, and it's pure water vapor in the air. It's purified. So all we've done is, with distillation, is mimic. We've been instructed by God Himself how to purify water through those two means, through filters and through evaporation. And there's lots of things where Velcro, we've talked about that before, where that one guy was out hiking and he had that one weed that stuck to his clothing. Cockleberry, yeah, and he studied it for many years there, and he came up with Velcro on how the little hook on it hooked. And he's like, oh, this could be interesting. And Velcro is used all over things, even in space, right, for astronauts. But all they did was mimic there what's there. They're instructed by nature, things God created for our usefulness. Now think of this. This is what Charnock says. Okay? This is where we're getting to reason and think by the things that have been made and how they're useful, they're harmonious and useful to us. This is what he says, quote, "Since man did not make them, he did not also order them for his own use. If they conspire to serve him who never made them, they direct man to acknowledge another who is the joint creator both of the Lord," that's us, we have dominion over this world. So we have a small L Lord. We are the lords of this earth, right? Small L, because God's given us dominion. "So if they conspire to serve him who never made them, they direct man to acknowledge another who is the joint creator both of the Lord and the servants under his dominion." Unquote. And this is where you think of Genesis 1, 27 and 28. Genesis 1, 27 and 28. "So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. Then God blessed them and said to them, be fruitful and multiply, fill the earth and subdue it, have dominion, be Lord over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the air, and over every living thing that moves on the earth." We are, with a small L, lords of this creation, with delegated dominion from God, who is the Lord of lords and King of kings. But we are acknowledging then that God is the creator of all and the creator of us and these other things that serve us, that are subservient to us, that are useful to us, that God placed then all things in their order before he placed man in the midst of all of it. He made it all harmonious as a great and wonderful habitation for us, human beings created in his image, that everything would be useful to us. Job 38:4, where God said, "Where were you when I laid the foundations of the earth? Tell me if you have understanding." We weren't there yet. We were created last in day six, in the week of creation recorded for us in Genesis 1. God placed all things in their order, in their place, with these unique subserviencies and harmony in order to be useful to you and me, who he placed in this habitation. All is ordered by God for man's use. Jeremiah 10, 12 and 13. Jeremiah 10, 12 and 13. God has made the earth by his power. He has established the world by his wisdom and has stretched out the heavens at his discretion. When he utters his voice, there is a multitude of waters in the heavens, and he causes the vapors to ascend from the ends of the earth. Genesis 1:26. I read 27 and 28. Let me read Genesis 1:26. Then God said, "Let us make man in our image, according to our likeness. Let them have dominion." So he created all these other things, right? The heavens and the earth, and he filled them with all these creatures and set up these systems and their subserviency one to another. And then he says, "Let us make man in our image according to our likeness, and let them have dominion. Let them be lords over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the air, over the cattle, over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth." We started with this at the beginning of tonight. I'm going to read it again. Isaiah 45:18, the end of the verse. God did not create in vain. He formed the earth and made it, who has established it, who did not create it in vain, who formed it to be inhabited. He formed it to be inhabited for our use of both the heavenly bodies and the lower world. Remember we said one of the unique things of the heavenly bodies at night? Remember those the tall ship days? They could know where they were and where they were going by studying the stars for navigation. But as well, we are able to see the magnificent expanse of God's creation at night. See the stars glisten. Remember, they'll say that Abraham had a crude telescope in his day when God said, "Look up at the stars, and your descendants will be as many as the stars in heaven." And he had a crude telescope to look up there in his day. Now, it wasn't until the 1920s, as I mentioned, where we had a big, powerful enough telescope to understand that way out there, one glistening of light actually enlarged is another galaxy. It was Hubble's telescope that it was able to see that. So it wasn't really 100 years ago that we've known that there's not just this galaxy, we're in the Milky Way galaxy, but there's billions and billions of other galaxies. But part of that is to be this wonderful thing of the heavenly bodies as well, just for us to just bask and wonder at the almighty power of God. But how they're all interconnected. subserving one another for our use. For our use. And you say, well, why are those galaxies out there? Well, we can gaze on them and what? Glorify God. Honor God and give thanks. I put it at the very bottom here. God did not create this world in vain, but He created it to be inhabited. Primarily by you and I, as human beings created in His image. This is I taught environmental conservation. Conservation for many years in college. I say, do you know the difference between environmental preservation and conservation? You ever pondered that? Preservation means no use by man allowed. We have millions of acres set aside in the West under federal lands that are wilderness preserves. They're preservations. Where no use is allowed by man at all. Not even a chainsaw. Nothing. No hunting. No nothing. Conservation is where we seek to use the environment to meet our needs in a sustainable way. If I ask you and say, which one do you think is biblical? Is it meant just to be sitting there with no use by man? My response is no. Now, I do like the idea of parks, but then we hike around them and all of that. We're able to enjoy certain magnificent things of God's creation with national parks. Nothing different from them from the U.S. Forest Service land, where there is some things done with management for trees and hunting and fishing and other things and harvesting of trees and lot for man's use. But you want to do it in a way that's sustainable and cultivating and caring for the garden in a good way. But I think the idea behind wilderness preserves is an unbiblical worldview. You get me? Because God did not create this world in vain. He created it to be inhabited by us. To manage it and use it for our needs. But I do think parks are a good thing. But to have millions of acres that could be harvested for lumber or used for fishing or hunting or other things, and literally they, by law, by federal law, nothing is allowed by man. I've hiked into them, by the way. There was one I hiked in, a wilderness preservation in Wyoming. I hiked in with some other foresters one day. It was an all-day deal to get in there and hike around. But it bothers me because I don't believe there's a biblical basis for it. Here again, this is where you're trying to think in biblical principles. God exists. He has created this world for certain reasons. Or how we are managing it, is it biblical or not? Are we following biblical principles? We have to ask these things all the time. So, Lord willing, next time we meet, we're going to continue a little bit more with this order or subserviency, and that it's regular and it is uniform. As well, this order and subserviency is constant. And then kind of a conclusion with it, that there is one who has ordered it all. So Lord willing, that's where we're headed with Charnock's arguments.